Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, we are previewing the Big 12 Big Monday matchup that is coming up between the Kansas Jayhawks and the Oklahoma State Cowboys. To help me do that, I have returning to the podcast Philip Slavin from Landgren Gauntlet over at Cowboys Ride for Free, and also my my cohort over on the 1012 podcast. Philip, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I like that you used our usual cohort word. That's the word. That's the watching a lot of Sesame Street. That's the word of the day. Let's call it that. That's cohort.
Yeah, yeah. I like using that word. It makes the most sense. So, yeah. Obviously there was a big story, Kansas and Baylor, you know, biggest game probably not only of the Big 12, but of the year so far. And we can talk a little bit about that one. I also want to kind of get your thoughts on the Oklahoma State matchup. For those of you guys that normally listen to the podcast, I will probably still be talking Kansas and Baylor a little bit with Fetch when we have him on in the middle of the week. But with the short turnaround, I wanted to make sure that we actually talked about Oklahoma State. And since Philip and I probably aren't going to get a lot of time to talk about it over on the 1012 podcast, I thought the perfect opportunity for us to kind of have this conversation here. So let's dive right in. Obviously, Kansas had a big win against Baylor. Oklahoma State also had a big win against Oklahoma. So talking about the Big 12 in general, what were your thoughts kind of coming out of the weekend?
You know, as far as the weekend goes, I mean, obviously nothing's going to match up to the Kansas-Baylor game. And I thought it absolutely lived up to everything we wanted it to be. You got a game that was close, that was competitive, and it came down to the very, very end, the final shot. And I mean, that's what you want in a game where the expectations were as high as they were. Look, we're talking about a game between two of arguably the best teams in college football. College basketball.
Football. Man, sorry. Wait, what?
Sorry. I have a 1 year old and I'm going to use that excuse until she's like 18 and off to college. And then I'll stop.
I honestly thought your excuse was going to be the fact that, you know, Oklahoma State had such a big win against Oklahoma that you might have partied a little too hard after that.
Again, I am not my youthful single self anymore. So partying hardy is a little bit hard.
There's more than one way to party hardy.
This is true. This is true. No, I mean, looking at the weekend, yeah, Kansas getting the win. I'm not shocked that Kansas won. I thought Baylor would. But I full credit to Bill Self. The game plan that they came in with was perfect and executed perfectly. And Azubuike, if he can play, I think that is his ceiling. If he can play closer to that on a more consistent basis, Kansas is going to be really, really hard to beat. But I will say, you know, Baylor there at the end had a shot to tie it up. And I felt with Baylor's momentum going into that, had they made that shot, had this game gone into overtime, that I kind of think Baylor and Waco had the momentum and probably could have found a way to get the win, but they came up just short. And I will also note, you can go listen to 1012. I had Ashley Hodge from Sikkim 365. He made a very good point. Three of Baylor's usual go-to scores were bad. They just couldn't make a shot. And that cost them. Full credit to Kansas defense. They played great defense. I think according to KenPom, they now have the number one rated adjusted defense in the country. Is it funny that Kansas, West Virginia, and Baylor are all ranked as the top three defenses in the country? They all preside in the Big 12. So that's a nice thing. I thought it was a big game. Obviously it means moving down the rest of the year. Like we've got four games left in the regular season and had Baylor won, regular season's over. Baylor's got it. They're the one seed. And for the second straight year, Kansas does not win the Big 12. And now here we are back to our usual saying of death, taxes, and Kansas wins the Big 12, because I don't see an obvious hiccup for either one. So we're probably going to have a shared regular season title again. So I thought it was a great game. It makes the end of the season, I think, more exciting. And I think it makes the Big 12 tournament, which is already one of the wackiest, weirdest things that always happens, because watch Iowa State somehow find a way to make it to the championship game, because that's the nonsense that happens. I'm kidding. I'm not, but I also am, because they're not good. But yeah. The point is, the lead up to Selection Sunday for the Big 12 is now, I think, more exciting than it would have been if Baylor had won.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's definitely a lot more, I think, intrigue to the end of the year, because it is now kind of open as to who, you know, or there's at least a question, like there's a possibility of more than one different outcome. You know, I mean, Kansas and Baylor both still have some decent tests, but given the way that they've played, it's kind of hard to imagine that they're going to fail any of them. And so I would not be surprised to have two teams go 17-1 and split the Big 12 title this year, or regular season title this year. You know, the other thing, you mentioned how Kansas has the best defense, according to KenPom. They actually have the best defense ever in the KenPom era. Right now, their adjusted defensive efficiency is 83.8 points per 100 possessions. That is the best record, or the best mark, in the entire KenPom era. So it's absolutely phenomenal, the kind of defense that they're having, and that does take into account the level of, you know, opponents that they actually have in terms of offensively. So it's intended to be a number you can look across seasons and look at comparative strengths of defenses. And, you know, I don't know that coming into this year that I would have said that Kansas is going to have, you know, the best defense. And it's kind of funny because West Virginia and Baylor are both also not that far off of the mark. You know, West Virginia has number two at 84.4, and you know, there's one other defense, I think, that has a mark better than them. That would have been number one in every other year except for this one, and I believe 2015, but I might have the actual year wrong. But it's absolutely ridiculous just how good the defenses are this year when you're looking at the comparative metrics. But, you know, talking about that game, obviously Kansas's defense had something to do with Baylor not shooting the way that they did. I also thought that there was a lot of very good coaching and scheming of how Kansas was going to attack Baylor and deny Baylor the opportunity to get the shots that they normally get. But I, you know, I don't want to spend this entire time kind of breaking down Kansas and Baylor. One, because I'm imagining that you've already kind of done that quite a bit. You know, and I don't want to take people away from that, but we'll have more of that on our episode that's probably going to drop on Wednesday. We're going to, I think, probably do a little bit extra this week from what we normally do for those of you guys listening here. But in terms of the other results around the league, there was a few other ones that surprised me, like West Virginia dropping their game against TCU at TCU. Their road woes continue. Obviously, Oklahoma State beating Oklahoma very handily was a big surprise. And while I think everybody expected that Texas Tech is better than Iowa State, going in and hanging, you know, a 30-point victory on them, I think was a little bit surprising. Of those other three, which do you think is the most shocking?
I think they're shocking. I mean, I think TCU, in theory, it's TCU beating West Virginia. But it was at home. It was an overtime game. And West Virginia has been struggling. They've now lost, what, four of their last five, and three straight on the road. And in fact, they've got one road win in Big 12 play. And that was second game of the season when they went to Oklahoma State, when Oklahoma State was bad and couldn't hit water from a boat, in the middle of the ocean. And that's their only road win in conference play up to this point. And they still haven't been able to find one. They've got a couple more chances against Iowa State and Texas, blah, blah, blah. This is a good West Virginia team, but it's a young West Virginia team. And it's a kind of West Virginia team that I think I might pencil in as a first round upset kind of West Virginia team. So that one was a little bit surprising. OSU beating OU by 18 is surprising, or 17, but Oklahoma State winning that game is not surprising. Bedlam tends to go to the home team a lot. Oklahoma State's playing. Isaac Likely, the team started 7-0, let's put it this way. And then Isaac Likely got mono and he missed a stretch of games, and they, about four games, and they just, after that happened, it took OSU forever to figure it back out. Like, they just, it just completely threw them for a loop. Lindy Waters has been banged up. He's got a fractured in his nose from the first Bedlam matchup. So if you happen to see rather, some aggressive play on Austin Reeves in that game, you'll now understand why. But OSU, as I have heard, the road game at Bedlam a couple weeks ago was the first time that likely was back to 100%. I'm able to play the whole game without having to ask to be taken out to take a breather. Mono is bad. Like, mono just ruins you. So getting yourself conditioned back to where you were takes forever. So OSU is finally, and I'll note that to me is where OSU finally started to kind of turn things around. Yes, they lost that game at Baylor, but they gave Baylor a real game. And since that game on the road at Baylor, OSU has won. Well, even before that, they beat TCU at home. So they are 4-2 in their last six. They had a tough, that game against Baylor was a close loss. And really, since the road game where they beat, or the home game against TCU about 2.5 weeks ago, outside of the second half against West Virginia, Oklahoma State's been competitive throughout every game. And I think this is, I'm getting off topic of what's surprising. I think it's that they won that big was surprising, but not that they won. I think Texas beating Kansas State on the road, they should beat Kansas State on the road. Kansas State is bad. I think Texas Tech beating Iowa State big, like, they don't have Halliburton for the rest of the season. Like, Iowa State probably should lose all the rest of their games by a large margin. Like, I just, none of that really moves the needle as far as surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't know that any of them were super surprising other than that West Virginia TCU game. But given how, you know, how poorly West Virginia's played on the road so much this year, you know, it's really not that shocking. So, all right.
Well,
so,
and to piggyback off West Virginia, we talked about, you know, their adjusted defense, according to KenPom, is number two in the country at 84.4. You know what their offense is, though? It's 73rd. Yeah. It's 73rd. Like, it's not great. It's not good. Like, that's not good. And that's been their problem. I mean, what the offense has really been the struggle for West Virginia during these games. And that's it. They play good defense and that's great. And I think that could help them in the NCAA tournament, but West Virginia looks like a team that next year is kind of the year. And this year is going to be a nice season for them. But unless they win a road game, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, West Virginia, it's kind of that team that I think gets into the tournament, and it's just going to depend on the matchup. If they're playing someone who isn't super offensively inclined, then there's a good opportunity, I think, for them to advance. But if they play a really good offense, yeah, their defense is phenomenal, but I don't know that they're going to be able to put up the kind of pressure that they need to be able to stop a good offense the entire time. But, I mean, I think it's fairly clear that they're, you know, one of the best four teams in the Big 12 this year. So it's just a matter of, you know, finishing. Like, I don't think that there's any real, you know, worry that they're not going to make the NCAA tournament unless for whatever reason they just don't play very well the rest of the way and drop like almost all the rest of their games.
Generally speaking, if you're and KenPom is not the decider of NCAA tournament, but so everybody can understand, basically, what is it, the net ranking, if you're a top 50, you're pretty much going to get in. It's about the same thing for KenPom. If you're a top 50 team in KenPom rankings, you're going to probably get in. West Virginia and KenPom is still number 7. Like, they're getting in. Like, to me, they're probably going to be, like, I still think they're probably going to end up about a 4 seed. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting. Maybe they drop to a 5, but a 4 or 5 feels about where West Virginia is probably going to end up, just because some of the other teams who may not be ranked as high in KenPom and net rankings are going to have better records, maybe do more in postseason tournaments. So I feel like 4 or 5 is about the right landing spot for them at this point.
Yeah, I would think so. But for some reason, I'm trying to remember. Actually, I will go pull it up right now. Looking at the like latest bracketologies, I didn't think that they were very high. Okay, I guess they're coming in at a 4 on ESPN. And that's, you know, for all the issues that he has with the way that Leonardi does the bracketology, he's usually fairly consistent. Most of them are pretty good about it. But I thought for some reason I was seeing on ESPN.
He's really good at getting all the teams in correctly or being off on their run, but not necessarily the seeding is always accurate. Yeah. And some of that's such a crapshoot. And again, we're basing this, like right now, this is based off of right now. Like this doesn't mean really much of anything other than just kind of stirring, like getting something to talk about outside of Like, to me, the purpose of bracketology at this point in the season, and really for most of the season, is, are you in? Or right. He does a good, because of his ability to say whether a team's going to get in on it, being as accurate as he is. For me, it's, does he have us in? How far from being out are we? And that's where it kind of comes to me. So if you're sitting there at a 4 or 5 or a 6 seed or something like that, you're feeling, or even a 7, you're feeling pretty comfortable, barring just an end of the season collapse. So.
Yeah. I don't know that we're necessarily, and I think I actually was confusing West Virginia's placement in the bracket and Texas Tech. Because Texas Tech, you know, is, I think, an 8 or a 9, kind of depending on where you look at.
They're an 8 right now.
Yeah. And
in Lenardi.
I don't know that I can really complain about that for either of them, though. Like, it's going to be really weird this year because the Big 12 is probably going to have the overall number 1 and overall number 2. And then after that, they're going to have 2 other teams probably that are going to be towards the bottom of the bracket. Or, you know, at best, like a 5. Because I think there's a very good chance that West Virginia is going to fall another couple seeds here and probably slot in at a 5 or a 6. You know, unless they just completely get the offense turned around. But, all right, so let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and throw to a quick break so that way when we come back, we can turn our attention to the game coming up. But we will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. All right, so let's go ahead and turn our attention to the actual game that's coming up tonight. That is Kansas versus Oklahoma State. It's at Allen Fieldhouse. You know, the first game that these two had didn't end up extremely close, but there was definitely times during the game where it felt a lot closer than it probably should have been. But what has changed for Oklahoma State since the last time these two teams met?
I mean, honestly, the thing I mentioned before the break is number one. Likely, starting point guard Isaac Likely is 100% healthy. And he is the best player on the team, and it has been proven based off of his illness and recovery from it. He's the most important player on this team. And when he is healthy, this team is much better. I'll say this. This is the team right now. When the season started, Oklahoma State started 7-0. And then a lot of OSU fans were just like, oh, we're so awesome. And I just kind of sat back and went, I think this team's really good. But let's not overblow a 40-point win against a mediocre at best Ole Miss team in New York where they couldn't hit a 3 to save their lives, and it wasn't just because of defense. And then Likely get sick, and the season just falls apart. And I don't think they were as good as that 7-0 start, and I don't think they were as bad as their 0-8 start to conference play. I think they were somewhere in the middle. And I think right now is the team that that Oklahoma State was supposed to have this season. I don't think this is ever a great team. I think it was this is a team that should have made the NCAA tournament, but due to everything that's gone wrong, they're not going to, and this is the season. So right now is, I think, where this team was supposed to be all year. So I'll say that. Likely is back. He's back to 100%. He's playing like we expect. He runs everything through. Lindy Waters has been banged up. He has not been himself. His shooting numbers are down this year, which is disappointing. Cameron Griff is up and down. And when he has a monster game, I would say look out. And the other guy I think really that needs to be talked about is, Caleb Boone. There's the two Boone twins, Caleb and Keelan. And of the two of them, Caleb is the one who is showing as a true freshman the most progress to this point. One of the things for OSU that's been a struggle is of the true freshmen, you've had some that have had good games, or they've had a couple of games where they've been nice, but no one had really stepped up. No one had shown constant progress and said, I'm going to be the guy in this class who's going to be a contributor. Because if you really look at this year's team compared to last year's team, the only difference is a whole bunch of freshmen. Your starting five are all back. Last year, I mean, they had starting five, and then like one, maybe two guys off the bench because everybody got kicked off the team for being a bunch of knuckleheads. So you brought in a huge freshman class. So this year's team is really just last year's team plus a bunch of freshmen. And you needed some of the freshmen to step up. And some have in spots, but no one had become in any way consistent. Caleb Boone is the guy that's finally starting too. And I think he had – you really saw that he had a very nice game against in Bedlam, had a very nice game against OU, 5 of 7 from the field, 4 or 5 from the free throw line, had 14 points, 6 rebounds. He's young. He makes young guy mistakes. He had some fouls. He's not going to be that good of an offensive weapon on a consistent basis, but he's a guy who's finally turning it on and is part of the reason OSU is playing so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm also kind of looking at the last game that they had. And obviously, you know, to keep it as close as they did, a lot of things had to go right. Yudoka Azubuike only had 6 points. You know, it looked like, let me see, McGriff and then Likely both, you know, seemed to have decent nights. I don't know that they could have been, or that they were as good as they could have been. And then it seemed like a lot of people were contributing all over the place. Does Oklahoma State still kind of play that kind of style where they're spreading it out between a lot of different people, or has Likely and Lindy Waters kind of started to take back over and started to give kind of most of the production for the team?
A lot of this is still going to go through Lindy Waters. Like he's still one of the most important players on this team. But I do think they're trying to move the ball around more. You're seeing more from Jonathan Laurent. He had a tough game against Kansas last time, played 14 minutes, went 1 of 6 from the field. And he's a grad transfer guy they brought in. He struggled a lot early in the season. He's finally kind of turned things around as of late. He's been far more consistent, especially during this nice 6-game stretch that Oklahoma State has had. They give him more opportunities. Obviously, DeZagua coming off of the bench. You know, he's the guy who, if he can get hot and hit shots from outside, that's what his job is, you know, then OSU is dangerous. But this is not a great shooting team. Oklahoma State is not one. It's a team with a lot of guys who want to try and get, you want Cam McGriff going to the rim. You want Likely cutting to the basket. When Chris Harris was healthy before he had knee surgery and out for the rest of the year, he was a guy who was good at getting to the basket. This is not a great shooting team. They do spread it around as much as they can. But I do think as the game goes, you just look to see who's got the hot hand. And that's who they're going to try and funnel it to. And yeah, I think that is, sorry, I had the cat crying. My wife's, I don't know what was going on.
No, that's all right. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of an understatement when you say that, that Oklahoma State is not a good shooting team, because they are a very, very bad shooting team. Now, of course, part of that seems to be like, kind of like what you were talking about. You know, when you're losing one or two of your best shooters for large stretches of the season and everyone else is trying to fill in and maybe forcing it a little bit, like, it's not necessarily that shocking that the shooting, you know, kind of falls off a cliff. But DeZagua, I believe, would be the guy that you would have expected to be shooting a whole lot better. And he seems to be shooting fairly well overall in the season. But whether it was Kansas's defense on him, or he just had a horrible night. I mean, he was only, well, he didn't have a single point, actually. He was 0-of-3 from three, and he didn't really take any other shots or really do that much. I don't know how much of that was him just not ever getting into a rhythm, or Kansas playing really good defense on him. It's always kind of hard, I think, for Kansas fans, especially this year, to truly evaluate the opponents that they've had, especially the ones that they played already, you know, and are coming back, because with how good their defense plays, it's hard to really get a true sense of how good that other offense could potentially be until, you know, they're just having the random guy go off for three, you know, just over and over and over again. Kansas always seems to be the you know, to be attacked by some random guy that just goes off for three that usually has no business hitting a bunch of threes. It's, you know, I always look for him this year because it seems to happen so often, but it's also kind of hard to figure out who that's going to be because of how good this defense has been, because of the good perimeter defenders that they have. that seemed to be able to lock down some of those guys a little bit more often this year than they had been able to in the past.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anybody outside of the usual suspects if someone was going to go off from three. Like Dizzy, Lindy Waters, those are the two guys I would really expect. You're not wrong. This is not a great shooting team. Dizzy shoots is the best outside of, you know, Yorne, who's one of one for his one attempt and he hit one. And then, you know, Hadlock. But really the guys that matter, Dizzy shooting 41% from three. Everybody else is, you know, Keelan's 34. Everybody else is like 31% or worse. So,
right.
I mean, maybe Lindy has a game like he's had in the past where he kind of goes off. Maybe Dizzy has a really good night. It seems like they've really cut back on his attempts the past few games, especially during this kind of run. I don't know that there's a guy on this roster I would be worried about just going off outside of those two. And those are two guys there that Kansas is going to know very well have the potential to go off and are going to be able to key in on. So I don't know that there's a guy on this roster I would look at and go, yeah, that guy. That if there was one guy I trust to just start raining threes ad nauseum, I don't know who that is that you wouldn't see it coming from.
Yeah. So the last matchup that these two teams had, Oklahoma State did a really good job, I think, inside. You know, we've kind of seen that story already, though, once where Baylor did a really good job in the first meeting, and then Udoka went off completely in the second meeting. Is there anything that they did well in that first game, Oklahoma State, I'm asking about, that they could potentially try to use again to try to limit Udoka Azubuike? Or are you really not expecting anything like that because of how well Kansas was able to dismantle the inside game that Baylor had in the second meeting?
I mean, I think Yorne deserves some credit. For one, he did a good job and stayed out of foul trouble. He had one foul in the game, which is crazy. And they, you know, he came off the bench. He didn't play as much as usual. I think they just, I think Azubuike starting to figure some things out from what I've watched from Kansas. So I don't know that there's necessarily at this point, his inconsistency is more, I think, about whether or not he's going to have a good game or a bad game than necessarily it is the opponent at all times, if that makes sense. And I don't make a shot at other teams who have done a good job against Azubuike, but as of late, it feels like it's going to kind of be up to him if he's going to have a good game. Now, I will say this again. If Yorne stays out of foul trouble, and if Boone and McGriff can do a decent job as well as staying out of foul trouble and kind of trying to limit him, I think they can do a better job than Baylor did. And I do think, obviously, you have the tape from the game against Baylor. That's a pretty quick turnaround, but you have that game tape and can say, okay, if they try and roll this out against us, we can try and do a few things to limit it. We may not be able to stop all of it because, again, we've got 48 hours to prepare for it. But I think having that on tape will help OSU to some extent prepare for a similar game plan.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, it's not just that there's only 48 hours. You know, it is also kind of the fact that Udoka is probably the best big man overall in the nation this year, especially on the defensive end.
No, I agree.
So, I mean, but to be, you know, to be completely fair, like, Baylor was trying to do a lot of the same things, and I think one of the biggest differences here was that Kansas found a way to make better passes to Udoka, to find better ways to get the ball into his hands, whereas in the last game, he only took six shots in that first meeting against Baylor because they were really only able to get it into him that many times. I think the biggest contributor of whether Udoka has a good game or not isn't even necessarily his own work. It's how quickly and how often and how, you know, how well can they get him the ball in situations where he is then set up to do something with it? And that's what's changed a lot. That's what was so different from the last game to this game for, you know, Kansas against Baylor, was that they started using that middle screen so that they could actually open it up so that Udoka could get the ball and not have an extra guy sagging down to prevent those passes into him. So, you know, as long as Bill Self is kind of drawing those sorts of things up, I'm imagining, you know, introducing that middle screen wasn't just about beating Baylor. It was also kind of to counteract some of the things that Oklahoma State did really well last time. The question is going to be, how well is Oklahoma State going to be able to prepare to then counterpunch that? I don't know how, you know, how well Boynton's been able to kind of do those sorts of things this year. I also don't know personnel wise, if, you know, if they start to sag a little bit more or find other ways to kind of double team Udoka Azubuike, you know, we now have guys in Marcus Garrett and Devon Dotson who are a little bit more confident from the outside, are much more willing to shoot the three-pointer than they used to. So I guess after we've gone over all of that, what is the single biggest matchup that scares you as an Oklahoma State fan going into this game?
Playing Kansas.
Just everything?
I mean, how do I – this is going to make me sound like a bad fan, but I'll just be honest. Like, I just – like, OSU and Kansas, to me, and I'm always curious how Kansas fans feel about this. Like, in Big 12 basketball, I know there's Kansas-Kansas State. I know you have an in-state rivalry. And that's – but in-state rivalry isn't necessarily the same as, like, two programs that are a rivalry. Like, Oklahoma State-Kansas, to me, is a rivalry in the Big 12, like a real one, because OSU has found ways against Bill Self. And sometimes I think Bill Self is just like, you know what, I'm going to do my old – school a favor here. We're just going to go ahead and lose one. It's fine. No worries. Won't hurt our Sweet 16 run. But I'll be blunt. I don't see OSU having I don't see them getting a win here. I think they'll have a nice game, but this feels like this is just not a matchup that I think is good. OSU's not great inside. Like, I like Yorna and I like McGriff, and McGriff can be physical, but the way Kansas is shooting the three ball, with the way Bill Self is coaching right now, it's a masterful job he's been doing, and how they're better utilizing Azubuike, and the fact that OSU tends to go through scoring droughts, and I mean like scoring droughts in games, and even in these wins, they've still had stretches where you're like, oh, cool, 5 minutes, we haven't scored a point, that's fun. Oh, look, we're down again. I don't feel good about Oklahoma State here. This is not a game where I'm like, I'm excited to tune in. I can't wait to see what'll happen. Maybe we'll pull out a big, huge. Nah, man. I don't. Like, I'll be honest. Like, I'm going to enjoy the rest of this season, and I'm going to look forward to the NIT. Just because with all these young guys, they need to see some postseason practice and play, especially with next year's recruiting class coming in. But I'd be lying if I said I'm not at least like 30% checked out to college baseball right now.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I can't really blame you. You know, I think looking at this game, the only thing you really need to look at is the fact that KenPom has Kansas a 94% favorite in this one. Like, there is not – I mean, it would be a true miracle, I think, if Oklahoma State were to win this game, or honestly even keep it close unless Kansas just falls asleep at some point. And that's not like, you know, to kind of talk bad about Oklahoma State. It's just they've had a rough season. They've had a lot of issues, and Kansas is probably the most talented team and the best team in college basketball right now. It's just kind of one of those things that happens. To kind of talk about, you were talking about how, you know, this feels like a rivalry. I don't know how much of that has been that Oklahoma State seems to always catch Kansas at a, you know, at weird, inopportune times for Kansas. You know, there's been like a lot of times where Oklahoma State's gotten the upset against Kansas. It's been when Kansas has already wrapped up, you know, the conference title or wrapped up some sort of seeding, and it's not been a huge game for them. And so while they still take it seriously, because Bill Self still does like to win, you know, there's maybe not necessarily been as focused on exploiting every possibility in the game plan that they usually do or those sorts of things. But I will say, I do dread this team going down to Stillwater to play Oklahoma State, because weird stuff always seems to happen. I remember the one year where Kansas was clearly the best team in the Big 12, was fighting for a number one seed, went down to Oklahoma State out of nowhere when Oklahoma State was probably the worst team in the Big 12 by far that year, and Oklahoma State just slaughtered them. I don't even remember. I want to say it was in the mid-2000s, but you know, it's just some really, really weird stuff that just seems to happen all the time when Kansas plays Oklahoma State. You know, that's kind of one of the weird questions in terms of like who Kansas's rival really is.
I don't mean rival, like there's something to, I feel the word rivalry gets thrown around a lot, and I'll admit it. And I don't always know better words for it, but I do think there's a certain amount of, and I know everyone gets up to play for Kansas and da 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 da. And maybe every fan base feels the same way, but it always feels like OSU Kansas, and part of it's because Bill Self's from OSU, like, is just a little bit different. And OSU does, even with, like, Travis Ford and Brad Underwood's single year, and then Boynton in year one, sweeping Kansas in the regular season, which no one had done. There is something about Oklahoma State that seems to more be able to beat Kansas more than most anybody else can, which is
I would probably describe it. There's definitely a sense of mutual respect between the two programs.
Absolutely. There's no hatred or anything.
But like it's one of those things where, you know, Kansas recognizes when they go to play Oklahoma State, you know, the fact that Oklahoma State can get up and beat them. I don't know that that's necessarily the case with some of these other teams. You know, Kansas will get surprised sometimes by some teams because it happens to everybody at some point. But like you get the feeling that there's an intensity when Kansas goes to play Oklahoma State, even if the stakes aren't very high in that game. It's the same kind of intensity without all the hate that you get from a normal rival. And so like I think the best way to describe it is that there's just a good sense of mutual respect between those two teams, that they're not necessarily rivals in the way that we think of it as, you know, Kansas and Missouri, where they absolutely hate each other, you know, or you know, like Duke, North Carolina, like those kind of rivalries that people think are, you know, that like vicious, but there's definitely kind of that same intensity, I think, a lot of times when they play, because of that, because of all the ties between the two programs, you know, because of kind of that mutual respect they have for each other. So,
yeah, that is fair.
All right. So, you actually kind of answered my question. I was going to ask about your thoughts on whether this Oklahoma State team is going to push for the NIT, and looking at their schedule, it's kind of hard to imagine that they're not going to finish above 500 because they're one game up now. You know, they're probably going to lose this game against Kansas or against Kansas, obviously.
Probably. But then they have,
you know, Iowa State at home, Kansas State at home, and then they go on the road to face Texas at the end of the year. I easily could see them winning all three of those games, even if they drop the one against Texas. You know, that still puts them a game above 500. In which case, if they lose their first game in the Big 12 tournament, then they would still be 500 and would qualify for the NIT. And I have a hard time imagining that, you know, Oklahoma State's going to get left out of the NIT at this point. So I think it's fairly safe to say that there will be postseason play for the Cowboys. So, all right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, I agree. I think the NIT, I agree. I think they can win all three. I think they probably go 2-2 in these last four. And then, I mean, if I had to guess based off how teams are playing, I expect OSU is currently the eighth place in the Big 12 and Iowa State's ninth. I have a feeling those two teams kind of finish in that spot, and that's who I think OSU and Iowa State will probably face off in Kansas City for the first round game. So,
yeah, I think that there's an opportunity for them to jump up because Texas does not have a very, you know, easy slate for them. They have West Virginia and Texas Tech in the next two games. Then they go to Oklahoma. You know, so they could potentially lose that one or they could win that one. But either way, at that point, Oklahoma State, I think, would be in striking distance to potentially jump over Texas and get the seventh seed, which, you know, I not that it makes that much of a difference, because then that first game is still going to be, you know, it'll be against whoever the 10th seed is.
Kansas State,
because I don't think that Kansas State's going to get above Iowa State. So, you know, that might be helpful, and that would be a pretty much a guaranteed win against Kansas State there. To really make sure that they're above 500. But, you know, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference for their opportunity to get to the NIT.
No, I think OSU's an NIT team. I'm all for it. And if for some reason they're not, I'm weirdly enough, like, go to the CBI, go to the CIT, go whatever. With the class coming in next year and the expectations on next season for Oklahoma State, I am a...
Just get those extra practices.
Get as much practice, get any postseason opportunity you can for these true freshmen, because they need whatever they can get to help them for next year.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, Philip, is there anything else you want to leave us with before we get out of here for the night?
No, this is up on Monday. Obviously, our pod will be up today as well. That's the 1012 podcast, TE and the number 12, the word podcast on Twitter. You can find it anywhere podcasts are available. And obviously, Andy will be on mine as well. He always typically joins me for our Monday basketball recaps, and we'll have quite a bit of Kansas Baylor talk. We're going to have some Kansas State talk. And if you guys want to hear us talk about whether or not Bruce Weber's not any good, then you should probably join for that as well.
Yeah, be a lot of fun. And just a little bit of sneak peek, we are going to also peek ahead to the Kansas State game that's coming up on Saturday as well. So definitely get over there for that. We'll talk more about that game here, obviously, throughout the rest of the week, but get a little bit of preview of what's coming up there. So, well, we will go ahead and leave it there for the night. Philip, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there. So you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating as well, 5 stars, nice comments, we'd really appreciate it. If not, for whatever reason, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys to get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. But that'll do it for tonight. Philip, once again, thanks for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.